I like this Christmas tree because whenever I see it every year, when you stand up here and speak, you get to see something that you don't get to see if you're sitting down there. And what you get to see up here that you don't get to see if you're sitting up there is that behind the beauty of the Christmas tree and the, you know, the sparkles and the lights and the baubles is this sort of ugly, bare mess. No offense to the Christmas tree. And actually, we're going to be thinking about storms of life. I think most of the time when we're going through storms in our lives, we're just like this Christmas tree, right? We come to church on a Sunday and people say, so how are you doing? You say, oh yeah, I'm great. And we look like the Christmas tree, you know, on the surface, things look great. But behind that facade, very often is a chaotic mess. Helen Keller, who you may know was born deaf and blind, she once said, character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, ambition inspired, and success achieved. And if we're honest, we struggle with that principle in our lives because we love life to always be easy. We'd love life to always be carefree and problem-free, but it isn't. And sometimes in our trials, we don't cope too well and we can panic. And it's at that point we have the choice to make that we've been discussing almost weekly as we've gone through the book of Acts. The choice is, do we look to God? Do we raise our eyes heavenward? Do we plead with the maker of heaven and earth when the storms arrive? Do we cry out like the psalmist in Psalm 69, verse 1, where he cried out, save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. Are we dependent on him, or do we look to ourselves? The question to ask as we think about this passage that we're looking at this morning in the book of Acts is very simple. When it comes to trusting God, are we willing to put everything on the line as Paul does here? No backup plan, no plan B. Are we willing to trust God, or will we find ourselves doubting his ability to keep us safe when these storms arrive? The story so far, in sort of a very compressed version, is that Paul has faced numerous rejections for the gospel. He's been dragged in and out of court. He's been falsely accused. He's endured mob violence. He's suffered severe beatings, almost to the point of death. But now in this passage, he faces a completely different challenge altogether. Now it's not a man-made trial that he's up against, is it? It's a natural disaster that has been allowed into his life. And the question is, how would he cope? Paul and his companions, Gaius and Aristarchus, have joined this ship to Italy under the oversight of this centurion that we read about named Julius. The Bible tells us that it was after the fast, which probably refers to the Day of Atonement. So October time. It's autumn, it's late in the sailing season, and because of this timing, there's this urgency to undertake this journey. They all knew that as they set sail at this time of the year, that to undertake this journey, there was potential for this voyage to be perilous. The weather was closing in fast, just like it was last night. Felt pretty stormy last night, didn't it? Verse 8 of chapter 27 finds Paul and his companions arriving at this place called Fair Havens near the city of Lasea. And it's from this point, after verse 9, tells us that they spent much time in this place, that Paul delivers to them this stark warning that the people who are in authority over him, the people who have power over him, he gives them a warning. Verse 10, he tells them very clearly, he says, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives. And that was, in fact, the reality. Had not God graciously intervened into their situation, they surely would have perished along with the ship and its cargo. So they're given this warning, but they ignore the warning. And as it is so often with our lives, and as it is especially with the gospel, everything seemed fine on the journey to begin with, right? That's the story of our lives. If you're not a Christian this morning and you hear Stephen or I or anybody else stand up in this pulpit and say, listen, trouble's coming, you need to put your faith in Christ, you might say to yourself, well, my life's great, thank you very much. I don't need Jesus. I don't need faith. I don't need to trust the God that you talk about. Because my life's going great. But trouble's coming. Sooner or later. Verse 13 tells us, when the south wind blew softly, supposing they had obtained their purpose, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. So what's the situation for them after the warning? The situation is, everything's calm. Everything's fine. No worries on the surface of life. Things seem to be going to plan. But on the horizon, trouble is coming. Sort of reminds me of 2 Peter 3. You know, how we can get lulled into a false sense of security as we go through life. 2 Peter 3 tells us, scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God? I mean, that's a pretty clear message, isn't it? Yes, things might seem like they're going on like they always have, but things are not going to keep going on like they always have. I mean, that is the experience of all of us. Things change. Life gets difficult. One day, life is going fine. Your job's great. The next, it's a complete nightmare. One day, your health is great. The next, you're looking down the barrel of something serious. That's the experience of life. They're overconfident here. They're oblivious to the danger, despite Paul's warnings, and the deception of the condition. You know, this south wind blowing softly, we read, supposing they'd obtain their purpose, supposing everything is fine, it lulls them into a false sense of security and a false assumption that there is no danger and that somehow things are just going to work out fine in the end and never ever change. Despite the warning of devastation, despite the warning of ultimate disaster that they've received, they ignore foolishly the warnings and carry on regardless, and initially, it looks like a good decision, doesn't it? Initially. But it wasn't long until they realized that the terrible error they've made. You see, my first point this morning is, whether we're ready or not, the storms will always come into our lives. The storms will come into our lives, and they'll plunge us into danger when we least expect it. And there are many different types of storms that we have to face as we navigate through life. Maybe right now, you're going through a storm. Maybe this morning you would say, well, actually, I know what you're talking about because I'm in it. I'm in the storm right now. Verses 1 to 9 make it clear that time wasn't on their side. The weather conditions are atrocious. Luke repeats different phrases to make the danger clear to us. Verse 4, he talks about it. Verse 7, verse 9, verse 10, over and over and over. He says the conditions around them are woeful. This was a storm that was going to rage with such ferocity that it would actually lead them not just to fear for their lives, but to actually give up hope of having any salvation. And, you know, we're always left in that place of having no hope when we don't have hope in the God of all hope. You see, that's what the storms in our lives, they have the tendency to do. They make us believe that there is no hope to be found. The devil tells us that. He says, you can't trust God in your time of need. He won't be there. And that's why we panic when the trials arrive. Look at verse 20. Chapter 27, verse 20 tells us, now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. So that tells us they had hope that they would be saved. They had hope that they would survive this. But as the trial continued, like a dissolvable aspirin, their hope just disappeared. And the longer their ordeal continued, the more hopeless their situation appeared. And after a while, they realized that because of the storm, they can't see the sun anymore during the day. They can't see the stars anymore at night. and so their only familiar means of navigating through the storm has gone completely. They don't know where they are. They don't know where they're headed, and they're in great peril. And actually, they're seeking their peace in reality only with the evidence of the storm removed. That's the only condition that they believe they can ever have peace, is if the storm isn't there anymore, then we'll have peace. But you know, God promises something far greater to us in our lives if we know and love Him. He doesn't promise to remove the storms of life. What He promises is that in our storms, He's present. And that's what Paul and his friends discover in this passage, that despite the ordeal, God hadn't abandoned them, even though He had every right to abandon them because they'd ignored the warnings. Paul says, he actually says, I warned you. You didn't listen. I told you we shouldn't sail from Crete. I told you we'd suffer this disaster and loss. But then in verse 22, there's this ray of hope. He says, now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For there stood by me this night an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not be afraid. My second point this morning is when the storms arrive, we're not on our own and we can trust in God's promises if we belong to Him. Take heart. Take heart. That's what they're told. Why? Why? Because Paul says, this evening, you're not going to believe it, but something incredible happened. God sent an angel to me in the midst of this storm with a message of good news, of great joy for all the people. There's my little nod to the carol service today. That's what it was. And it can only be great news from God, Paul says, because I belong to Him. Did you notice that verse 22? He says, an angel of God to whom I belong. You see, belonging to God in the storms of our lives, that makes all the difference. All the difference in the world. Do you belong to God this morning? Are you His? Are you saved? Can you really call Him Father? Do you know what it is to be able to cry out to the Maker of heaven and earth and know that He loves you and know that He hears you and know that He's going to answer your prayer and know that even if He answers your prayer in a way that you don't want, that you can still trust Him because He loves you? You're precious in His sight. Can you say that? You know, Paul could. If you're His, it changes everything. If you're His, it means that you're loved beyond measure, and you can be confident that whatever you're facing, God knows about it. If you're His, you can declare, like the psalmist in Psalm 27, verse 1, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? If you're His, you can say this morning, like Paul did to the church in Philippi chapter 4, you can say, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through Him who gives me strength. If you're His, you can rejoice. You can rejoice even in suffering, even in trials, even in the storms, even when the worst thing happens to you, through the hurricane of grief that might come upon you, you can say the righteous person may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all if you're His. That's what you can say. It's not a surprise to God. Our storms, they're not a surprise to Him. The ordeals of our lives, He loves us if we're His with an everlasting love. He loves us with a love. You say, well, how much does He love me? Well, He loves you and me enough to send His one and only Son to a cross. To die in our place, if you're His. If you're His, you're precious in His sight. You belong to Him. You're His treasured possession. He has you in the palm of His hand. What's the message here from Paul? What's the message? As these waters rage around them, and the vessels toss to and fro on the expanse of this ocean as those dark, angry storm clouds gather around them and hopelessness consumes them and threatens to swallow them whole like that giant fish that swallowed Jonah in his storm. What's Paul's message as their hope crumbles? His message is simple and his message is glorious. His message is God, He doesn't just know what we're dealing with. He's here. I belong to Him. I serve Him. He's here. in the storm, in the chaos, in the fear, in the anguish, in the brokenness of our lives. And he will keep us safe. That's his message. He has faith in time of trial. You say, well, what gives him that faith? How can I know this faith in my own life? How can I have this assurance that, so when the storms arrive, that I trust God like this? Well, verse 25 tells us why he has faith. He says, therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God. I believe God. I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. I believe him. Can you say that this morning? I trust God. However weak we are, however poor, however little our faith, or however small our grace may be, our lives are still written on his heart. Nor shall we lose our share in Jesus' love, C.H. Spurgeon said. Love that. How do you know we're going to survive this, Paul? That's easy, Paul says. God keeps his promises. He loves me. I trust him. My faith is in him alone. If God said it, I bet my life on it. I wouldn't just bet my life on it. I bet all of your lives on it. And even though they should have listened to Paul's warnings but didn't, and even though Julius, this centurion, listened instead to the owner of the ship, verses 10 and 11, and even though this peril was of their own making, there is still a chance for them to be saved because God is a God of grace. God offers them what they don't deserve, salvation in him, and his offer of salvation is still open to you today, whoever you are. If you're not saved, if you're not a Christian, if you've never got to that point in your life where you've cried out to him for rescue, that offer is still there today. When the storms arrive, we can trust in God's promises. And finally, if our trust is in God, he will save us. And eventually, he'll help us reach our destination in the end. What happens here? Does God remove the storm from their lives? No. Just like he doesn't remove the storm from our lives. They're in this situation, verse 27 tells us, for 2 weeks, right? The storm is still there for 2 weeks. Paul says, don't worry, God's here, we're going to survive. And then 2 weeks passes of storms and clouds and fear and anxiety, and it looks like nothing's going to change. And what happens? Well, what happens to them happens to us. Some of them, because the storm doesn't get removed and the trial remains, they start losing their faith in the promise of God. You notice that? They're looking around at the storm. They're looking at the clouds. They're looking at the waves. They're remembering their fear, but they're forgetting the promise. Verse 29 to 30 tells us, then fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff into the sea, under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved. You see, that wasn't Paul going back on what he believed God had promised, but the promise of God relied on obedience and faith with the people on board. Paul said, God has promised that we would be saved, but we have to obey what he's commanded in order for us to receive that salvation. We can't be saved any other way. We must run aground on a certain island, verse 26. That was part of God's plan of salvation for them, which meant they had to fully trust in God's plan, even though it didn't make sense to them, even though running aground probably seemed like the most bizarre way that they would ever survive this. And they get impatient. They get impatient. They get impatient for God to act in a time of trial. You ever feel like that? We all feel impatient at times. We all want God to expedite his plans for us. When things don't change, we want them to change. We're just like these men. Instead of faithfully trusting God and being patient, sometimes we look for plan B. We put the anchors down in fear. And verse 31 is Paul's way of saying there's only one way to be saved, and that's through faith in God. Every other solution ends with you perishing. And actually, that's the message of the gospel. The message of the gospel is exactly the same. Each of us, we're navigating our way through life across the sea. Sometimes the sea is calm. Sometimes the sea is stormy. Our bodies are the vessels that are tossed to and fro upon the waters of life. But we have a cargo, which is our eternal soul. And one day, your vessel, your body is going to be destroyed, and so is mine. Smashed against the rocks of time and old age and sickness. But our cargo, our soul, is eternal. And that will last forever. And it will either go to hell or heaven, depending on where your faith is and who your faith is in. And your only hope and my only hope of salvation, our only hope of escaping destruction, is to trust God, to put our faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And if we do, we can know God keeps his promises, and we can know certain salvation because of who he is. Jesus said himself, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one goes to the Father but by me." Through me, Jesus says, whatever you go through in life, through me, trusting me, you will make it to the shores of glory. Have faith. Ignore the clouds. Ignore the lightning. Ignore the howling winds. Ignore the gigantic crashing waves. Psalm 27:14, wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Because despite the many dangers, the many toils and snares, it's the grace of God. He will lead us home. As we think about Paul on this journey, I love how calm he is. I love that despite everything that's happening, he sits down and he takes communion. Right? That's phenomenal. He has such trust in God. He has such faith in God. This account of Paul and this journey, it reminds us of our journeys. It reminds us that as we navigate through life and the storms arrive, we have a God we can trust. And when we put our lives into his care, when we offer our lives to him in service, when he's our God, and we strive to live the lives he calls us to live, nothing can hinder his plans. And that should make all the difference, really, as we approach the end of another year. Because who knows? Who knows what storms are around the corner? Who knows what storms are going to face us in 2019? I tell you who knows. He knows. Only he knows. And when those storms appear, the question is, who will our trust be in? Are we going to seek to depend on ourselves and utterly fail? Or will we depend on God, whose promises never fail? As I finish this morning, I love that this chapter ends with the amazing words that we read in verse 44, which is a picture of the Christian getting through earth and one day getting to heaven. It says in verse 44, "And the rest on planks or on pieces of ship, and so it was that all were brought safely to land." Short version, they made it, right? Exactly what God said would happen, happened. Were they shipwrecked? Yes. Were they drenched and exhausted? Yes. Were they bruised and battered? Yes. But were they saved? Yes.